Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
All right. Good morning, everybody. 908 on KDXU. I'm flying solo today. My newsman Stockton had to go home, but we're here. And I want to talk about some of the guests we've got coming up this week on the Andy Griffin Show. Let's see. Tomorrow, Joanne Brinton, state running for state school board in our district, will be on the show. Her opponent, Kristen Norton, will be on Thursday's show. So we'll have, I don't know, 12 to 15 minute segments with each of them. Also, McCray Hepler will be on the show tomorrow. John Dunham from the school district will be on Wednesday. Mayor Chris Staley on Thursday. And, yeah, just a busy week. Today, well, I want you to check this out. I'm going to turn that music down real quick. Yeah, check this out.
Welcome to History That Doesn't Suck. I'm your professor, Greg Jackson, and I'd like to tell you a story. I promise you, a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history of this American Union, told through entertaining stories, all of which are 100% grounded in historical sources. You're all wondering, will young George Washington survive? George looks at his pocket watch, awaiting 4:30 a.m. sharp. Fire.
It's fun history.
Really good experience.
Inspiring.
I thought it was fantastic.
Good history always retains that human element, story. We are stronger when we recall, as Ely so rightly put it, that we are all Americans. That, to me, is history that doesn't suck.
Yeah, Dr. Greg Jackson joins me on the show today. Hi, Dr. Jackson. How are you? I guess I'll just call you Greg. Is that okay?
Greg is perfectly fine. I'm doing great, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Now, folks say, Jackson, I know that name. Well, Greg's wife, Sue, was on our show several times in 2020, maybe a couple times since then as well. She was an expert in virology when we were all going through, as a world, the whole COVID thing and everything. And Sue offered a very sane voice in the wilderness at times. And I didn't know her husband was like this super stud famous history that doesn't suck guy. I guess you weren't back then yet, were you?
It existed, but it was still growing for sure.
Still growing. Okay. Well, folks, Greg has a show coming up in St. George. July 2nd is the date. So it's part of really the whole 4th of July celebration week that week. And you've probably heard the commercials. We've been running quite a bit here on KDXU for the show. And I'm told the show, if it hasn't sold out already, will sell out fairly quickly. And Dr. Jackson, that's a testament because, let's be honest, when folks first hear, history, they think back to high school and maybe that professor who has 29 years in and getting ready to retire and he just wants you to shut up and watch a movie or take a multiple choice test or whatever. We don't get super enthused about history normally.
No, and that is, in fact, exactly why I started the podcast, and that's also what I'm getting at with the name, History That Doesn't Suck. I realize a lot of people have had pretty sucky experiences with history, and I'm saying that it can be different. So I say the proof is in the pudding. It's become the podcast has become a nationally loved show. It's usually trending in the top 10 podcasts in the country, and now I've been touring the nation for the last 2 years. So yeah, I guess I'm doing okay.
Now, you got a couple of kids at home, right? A couple of young kids?
I do. Yeah, we have three kids.
So going on tour is not an easy thing when you got young kids. How have you been able to balance that? It seems like it would be tough. Well, we'll get into the history stuff here in a minute, but it seems like that would be tough.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Thankfully, despite my wife's busy schedule, she and I were supportive of each other's careers. And the way we handle this for the most part is my shows are usually booked on the weekends. So I'm not like, say, a comedian who just goes from one gig to the next. Mm. I'm also, let's not forget, a professor at Utah Valley University. So I am here in Utah teaching during the week. Shows will be booked for the weekend, and I fly out to, whatever state it may be. I do a few shows and turn around immediately, and I'm back to work on Monday.
I have to tell you a little story about myself. So history in high school, just what I mean, I did what I had to do to get a decent grade. That was the extent of it. You know, learn enough to fill out the little dots on the test and be done. But sometimes yeah. an essay question or whatever. But when I was in college, I took a class, and I don't remember the title of the class, and I don't even remember the professor's name. But I do remember going into this history class, and it changed the way I looked at history, because what happened was my professor said, all right, you all have taken history. This is not your daddy's history class. He says, basically, you're all now, we are hiring you as private investigators, and we're going to go through to all the different big events in this country and investigate what happened, why it happened, how it happened, and perhaps coincidentally, the very first case we studied was the Salem witch trials, and today is the anniversary of the very first quote-unquote witch who was hung in the Salem witch trials back in the 1600s. Today's the anniversary of that. But that was the first thing that we were PIs for. We investigated. It changed history for me. Made it really kind of come alive.
Yeah, well, and that sounds like an excellent teacher, because that is how history should be approached. I sometimes compare myself to being a lawyer for the dead. because really, you know, situations are being educated over and over again. And any historian, in my opinion, worth their salt is going to be able to, you know, not just be the lawyer for the one side, I should say, but, you know, they're going to sift through all the evidence that's for and against the situation and be able to articulate the various views that are had on, you know, both sides of the war or whatever the conflict might be.
I obviously haven't been to your show. Now, is the show that you're doing here, is that part of the Unlikely Union? Is that what will be presented here?
Yeah, so that's the name of the stage show. So okay. History That Doesn't Suck is a podcast. This stage show, I call it the Unlikely Union. And it's about 100 minutes long. And in that 100 minutes, I give you 100 years of American history, more or less. We make our way from the Revolution through the Civil War. As we do so, I try to, and believe I succeed at giving a nuanced and careful account of our history. And, you know, I call it the Unlikely Union because it really, our nation is a miracle. When you really understand how many times we nearly fell apart during the Revolution, and people sometimes can remember that part. What we often forget is how many times we nearly fell apart throughout our entire history. There's no guarantee that this experiment in democracy continues to go on, and yet we've managed to do that. And frankly, I find it an inspiring story.
Yeah,
and perhaps one that, you know, resonates with people in our present.
One of the things that I think is important as far as history and historical figures is we tend to take these figures and they turn into icons, and they're not even really people anymore. These are they turn into legends, and I've seen it in my lifetime. I grew up as a teenager. Ronald Reagan was the president, and he was a real person. Sure. And he, you know, even though, I mean, he was the president, but to me, he was a real guy. And then I've seen now, as I've gotten older, Ronald Reagan, yeah, he was a real guy, but he's also turned into kind of this historical legend guy who did no wrong, who was perfect in every way. And we've done that now with a lot of our historical figures, from George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, et cetera. But you, like I started saying, one of the things I think is important is that we make sure that we all understand that these are real people with real feelings. They had real lives, and you know, it was real.
Completely agree with you. That's one of the things I strive both on stage and in the podcast to do is, you know, in my mind, that there are two errors that I see happen in history. One is the putting historical figures on pedestals and making them into basically gods. And then the problem that comes with that isn't only the warped perception we end up having of history, but then you get someone who comes along and they have to point out how false that narrative is, and they often swing the pendulum too far the other way. So now we're left with either this godly image or this demonic image of these historical figures. And, you know, both of them are just ridiculous. What you have are imperfect human beings just like us who are doing their absolute best, like hopefully we are. And when we can see them in from that perspective, you know, that's when I think it really becomes inspiring. And in fact, more so than putting them on the pedestal. I mean, my respect for George Washington went up as I came to have a more nuanced and careful understanding. My live show, for instance, you know, it starts with 22-year-old George Washington leading men into the first battle of his life. At Fort Necessity.
22.
And he, and he gets creamed, just absolutely botches it, completely loses the battle. Now, that doesn't fit with the image of, you know, the great general at which, in fact, George Washington lost more battles than he won. And some people look at that and go, well, see, so he wasn't that great and we tear him down. No, here's this 22-year-old kid who, with no training, with no real support from Virginia, from the leaders that unduly entrusted him to lead 400 men, is doing his best and striving right to the moment that he thinks he's as good as dead in the face of an enemy, a French and Native American allies, that has twice his numbers. And he learns from that lesson. And that moment sticks with him as we get into the Revolution. It informs the way he thinks through his battles there. And then during the Revolution, his tenacity and grit. Do you really respect the guy who can step into the ring and knock out his opponent without ever getting hit? I mean, sure, that's some great skill, but you don't know if that guy can actually take a punch. George Washington is bloody and bruised, figuratively speaking, by the British. He won't stay down. And that's the thing that I came to really, you know, admire and what made George Washington a personal hero for me. It's not that he's perfect. It's that he never gives up. He never says die.
You conjured in my mind Rocky, you know, the Rocky movies from back in the 80s and 90s, and Sylvester Stallone always got the crap beat out of him, right? But he always got back
up. Exactly. And that's what made the movie so great, right? I mean, think about how boring Rocky would have been if Sylvester Stallone didn't have to struggle to achieve, you know, even getting into the ring, right? All the training.
Yeah.
We can picture that, the montage, right? The end of the iconic music. He gets just the crap knocked out of him, but he won't stay down. And, you know, that is a more inspiring story. And it's, and beyond just what's inspiring, the fact is that is reality. That's what George Washington did. He, you know, the battle at Trenton on Christmas Day into the 26th. And that was George Washington refusing to let the Revolution die, even as his army had dwindled down to a mere few thousand soldiers and had been chased across three states and was freezing to death with their enlistments expiring in 2 weeks. By all rational, you know, assertions, the Revolution should have been done right then and there.
Yeah. I'm curious, Greg, how we talked about humanizing these people, making Abraham Lincoln or George Washington or whoever real people. That requires, though, on your part, a lot of research. How were you able to do this? Did you cobble together like journals and different? How were you able to make it so that we could get to know these people?
Sure. So, I mean, again, any decent historian, you know, they're going right to the source. So if we're talking about George Washington or Lincoln, for instance, I mean, not only have I read and I can name off all the best scholars who've written biographies and other works on them over the last century and change, but yeah, I've read their journals, I've read their personal correspondence, I've written their orders in you know, issued during wartime, all sorts of anything and everything that they personally wrote, friends about them wrote. I mean, that's where I know, for instance, that Lincoln had a high, shrill
voice. Yeah.
You know, it's fun to see the way it was described at the time. One newspaper man described Lincoln as having a voice like a bosun's whistle. And these are the sorts of things that, again, they bring them to life. When you hear someone, you know, one of the things I appreciate about Daniel Day-Lewis's performance, for instance, where he did embrace that high voice instead of giving us a Lincoln with this deep booming voice that fits our stereotype of a leader. Right. Yeah. Imagine being a politician. You're trying to run for office and you are, frankly, not considered a looker, and you have a really pitchy, scratchy voice. That should say yet more to us about just what an amazing leader he was, and how great his ideas had to be that he overcame what really should have been physical, you know, limitations in terms of just appealing to people for nonsensical reasons.
I wonder if they'd have had TV back then, if he would have still won.
I genuinely doubt it.
Probably not.
Or radio. I mean, another thing that worked to his advantage is that so much campaigning, when you got outside of the, you know, the local circuit, well, people are just reading newspapers.
Yeah.
You know, that most people never heard his squeechy voice.
Now, I've seen some videos of you doing the show. Again, we're talking with Dr. Greg Jackson, History That Doesn't Suck. I've seen videos, and you're wearing a guitar. Tell me you play that thing, and how do you integrate playing that and music into your show? The show is called The Unlikely Union.
Yep. So I do play guitar. I grew up playing in garage bands and you know, all those things. Yes, a child of the 90s and early part of the century. I played in 3- and 4-man rock bands. And so my theme song that plays at the opening of both this show and the typical podcast episode, I wrote that theme song. And I come out playing the guitar part. And throughout the whole show, you know, this isn't just a history lecture. Yes, I'm telling you the story of America between the Revolution and the Civil War, but you've got everything from, you know, light to the multimedia that comes into it, and music is an important part of that. I'm accompanied by a cellist and a violinist. So we have music that, just like when you're watching a movie, you know, will help set the stage and bring in those more sorrowful or joyful moments. Mm. So it's a constant throughout the show.
I'm curious, Greg, you're a pretty good looking guy. You, though have picked something that some people would say is a little nerdy. You're unnerding it, which is nice, but we all arrive at different points in our lives, you know, in the careers we choose in different manners. How did you settle on history? And for that matter, podcast didn't even exist when you were in college, I'm guessing.
Oh no! I mean, this is not the career I imagined, for sure. You know, in high school, history was the one subject I really enjoyed.
Okay.
The others didn't speak to me, and I remember the day that it came to life for me. I was sitting in Mrs. Berry's 10th grade world history class, and she was talking about the Napoleonic Wars and Napoleon advancing into Russia, and how, you know, history's full of irony and contradictions, because that's us, right? As people, humans are filled with irony and contradictions. All of us are on some level. And here's Napoleon, the emperor of France, who has overturned essentially the very revolution that let him rise to power and is now a monarch conquering the continent. And yet his troops, as they advance into Russia, they're sharing the ideas of the French Revolution, which are allowing these ideas about liberty and civil rights to spread across this king and monarchical dominated continent. And in that moment, you know, I just never really had thought in my teenage brain, I never really considered, well, yeah, they might be enemies, but people are taken captive and people are people and they talk. And then I bet, yeah, friendships might even form. And so for me, that was just a real light bulb moment to really see the humanity, even in wartime among enemies. And from that moment on, I enjoyed history. I cared about it. I I did an LDS mission, went to BYU, got a bachelor's degree and then a master's, and then went to the U of U for a PhD, and then got hired at UVU. And after a few years, I love my I love the university world. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate what academia does, but I was a little frustrated with what I would consider the ivory tower aspect of academia. We we spend a lot of time writing articles that can get a little esoteric, that are not intended for the public. And I wanted to have more public engagement. And by this point, podcasts did exist. They weren't as big. But as I was looking at the top podcasts in the nation in history, I didn't see a single historian actually doing any of them. And I've come to be pretty good friends with the other top history podcasters now, some of whom are already on that list and some of whom have joined me there. So I don't want to speak ill or begrudge them, nothing to that effect, but it's just funny to have a category, you know, this medium where millions of people are absorbing their history and you don't have a single person who's an actual professional historian working on it, you know, doing it. So in my mind, I looked at that, and of course I couldn't anticipate the success I've seen, but I just thought, you know, I'd like to do that. I'm going to dive into it. And podcasting, still to this day, but even more so then, you know, it, new mediums are, as they grow up, they haven't been fiercely regulated yet or taken over by big companies. So it's more of a real meritocracy. And that was another thing that drew me to podcasting, the idea that there were fewer guardians. I could put something out there, and if it was of worth, then maybe this would catch on. And, you know, it's been my shock and pleasure to see it catch on to the degree that it has.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my path there.
Nice. I have a sports background, and I'm a big believer in meritocracy and just – you know, the best man for the job, period. And if, you know, for instance, with this show, if someone comes along and has a better show than me and puts me off the air, I'm not going to begrudge them, you know, if they did that. And I think, and you know, maybe it's the capitalist in me, but I think people, you know, people deserve to succeed that earn that right and do it right. So I got to get a break in, Greg, but when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about your relationship with young people. I assume, being podcasts, that your audience is mostly young people, but also your relationship with the students there at the university. And maybe we can talk a little bit about, remember the man on the street segments that Jay Leno used to do, and he'd hold pictures up or ask people about things in history, and
of course,
you know, get terrible answers. See if that was involved in your decision to do what you do as well. Right now we do need to check with weather, so we'll be back with Dr. Jackson more after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 735 on, or 935, I don't know where I got the 7 from, but 935 on KDXU. Good morning to you. Dr. Greg Jackson, history that doesn't suck guy, is here on the air with me. Greg, how you doing, man?
Doing great.
Appreciate you coming on. Now, let's do some 101 stuff as far as podcasts. A lot of my audience here on the Andy Griffin Show are folks that are, well, we have some gray in our hair. And might need a little help in programming our iPhones or whatever. So if I'd never listened to a podcast before and I'm like, man, this Greg guy sounds kind of interesting, what would be the best way to go about finding a podcast and listening to something that you do?
Well, for my podcast specifically, I mean, you can stream it right there on your computer if you want. If you just go to HTDS, for History That Doesn't Suck, htdspodcast.com.
Okay.
All the episodes are right there. But if you want to go through one of the typical apps, Spotify, Apple, those apps, I'm available in all the usual places where podcasts are. So if you have an iPhone, the Apple podcast app came on your phone, whether you liked it or not.
Oh, okay.
And if you just type in History That Doesn't Suck in that app, it's going to pop right up.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And
it'll just play right there on your phone or computer. Just sit there and listen, and you can have it on the background and go garden or whatever it is you want to do, right?
You know, I have a lot of listeners who do that. And in fact, I will say you're right that podcasts do skew younger, and I certainly have a lot of young listeners, but I also have a healthy number of listeners with gray in their hair. and, you know, in part because they enjoy being able to discuss the episodes with their kids and even their grandkids. I get a lot of emails from listeners in that category, some who have even told me, this always, it humbles and blows me away that this would even be the case, but some who said it helped heal some relationships where,
oh, nice.
Where their kids have some very set views on things that are pretty unnuanced, and by the time they get through with a few episodes, you know, they're kind of able to see a few colors instead of seeing things in a very black and white, you know, unnuanced sort of way.
So
you go ahead.
I was just going to say, so I'd like to talk about, maybe explore that just for a couple of minutes here, that young people in history. There are plenty of folks out there, and I may or may not be one of them, who say, well, young people just don't know their history anymore. That's why they are choosing things such as socialism and communism and stuff. Young people just don't know their history. Is that a fair statement, or would you say we're off base?
I think that is a fair statement. I mean, I also think it's a fair statement to say that often previous generations think that they knew their history better than they did, but it's dumbed down a bit more. We increasingly have a world where things are reduced to shorter and shorter sound bites. You know, Twitter, for instance, right?
We can't, 150 characters. We can't be bothered.
Yeah, exactly. TikTok videos are all the rage, and the important thing is that they're short. Instagram, the reels, it's got to be short. That's what everyone says, and the odd thing is my success, I found my success in doing the exact opposite of all these things. I produce 1 hour a piece episodes. You know, they're highly detailed and rich in research. Each of my episodes, you don't know it as you're listening, right? You feel like I'm just telling a story, and I am on some level. But what you don't necessarily know is that the way that episode came to be is it was weeks of research that resulted in about a 9,000 word verbatim, you know, written down document with about 100 footnotes to it going to various historical sources.
Wow.
And that's what I read word for word into the microphone because it's important to get the history right. I'm not spitballing this. I'm not even accepting the level of inaccuracy that could come innocuously in a lecture. Right. These are essentially at the same level as any historical article I write as a professional historian, but I'm delivering them in a fun storytelling sort of way so that it doesn't feel like that. It feels like you're watching a show on Netflix or perhaps more to the point, since it's audio, it feels like you're listening to a 1930s style radio show.
Oh, wow.
You know, telling tales. But I'm also sneaking in all sorts of, you know, details. Once I hook you, I get you interested. In fact, if you'll forgive me, Andy, I'll give you one example. My favorite example is episode 2. Now, I have plenty of other episodes, you know, do this. Most of them do. But episode 2 is on colonial tax policy. That's not a topic that you hear and go, wow, that's exciting. Yeah. I want to learn about colonial tax policy. But I open the episode with a 29-year-old Virginian who's just been elected to the lower house in the colonial Virginia's legislature, known as the House of Burgesses. He's a fiery young man by the name of Patrick Henry. And we open on him ripping into this new law that's set to come out shortly. You know, they've heard about it percolating over and across the Atlantic in the halls of Parliament, this Stamp Act. And he has some choice words about it. And as he goes on, he alludes at one point that perhaps someone should off the king. And the cry of treason fills the room, right? And that's where I stop the cold open, and I leave you wondering what's going to happen to 29-year-old.
Dun, 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 yeah.
Exactly. Well, now you're invested. So you got to know what's going to happen to Patrick. So you're going to sit there, and frankly, you're going to listen with interest as I tell you about the way that, say, the Sugar Act, which I also include in that episode, technically lowers the tax on imported sugar from the Caribbean, from foreign ports, but it actually enforces it. So the colonials were actually upset at a lower tax, but they were upset because they were so used to smuggling and getting away with it on a level that no one really even assumed it was a real law, kind of like the way most of us jaywalk, and no one thinks to themselves, yeah, I'm a lawbreaker. So, you know, we go through those sorts of examples and we hear about smugglers. And then eventually, of course, we get back to Patrick and we find out what happened to him. But, you know, that's the sort of journey that I take the listeners on. And yeah, it really complicates in a good way, you know, the story. And it helps people of all ages, but I would say particularly our TikToking, tweeting generation, you know, to get a deeper cut on history than they're getting pretty much anywhere else, because I've reeled them in. You know, the attention is being given voluntarily. So now they'll listen.
When Jay Leno was on TV every night, he used to, one of his favorite things to do is go to a college campus. And he would ask history questions, sometimes showing pictures, sometimes just asking questions.
I remember.
Yeah, of young people. And I know there were probably people that gave great answers, but most of the time, the ones that made TV were people giving really, really, really wrong answers, like not even close answers. And it was humorous and it was entertaining. But I wonder if you ever thought, did you ever think about that kind of thing when you were thinking about becoming a history professor and doing a podcast on all this?
I would say I thought about that as I entered the podcast space. Okay. Because one of the things that had me thinking that I wanted to engage more with the public was, you know, it was 2017. And, you know, I like everyone else, I was watching our continued decline in high-quality civil discourse. And, you know, as I tell my students, I'm not invested in getting them to vote one way or the other. In fact, I think that being an honest academic means that I should never be trying to win them over to whatever my views are. It's about presenting the information and leading them to learn to be critical thinkers for themselves. And that, I, you know, maybe I'm naive, but I think democracy is best served when we as a people are willing to think critically and challenge each other in the public space. And I want my students to develop those skills, whether they happen to agree with me or disagree with me. And frankly, I don't want them to agree with me simply because they think I'm cool or they like me.
Yeah.
That's terrible. That's worthless. So, you know, I wanted to help the public as a whole develop that, which is where, you know, when I get into some divisive topics, I will also be very careful, even as it's hard for me to, you know, I want to say what I think, but I won't. I'm very careful to lay out the arguments for both sides. And then, you know, back to the lawyer example, lay out both arguments and then leave it at that and let my listeners make their conclusions.
Greg Jackson will be putting on a show July 2nd, and it's going to be right here. I think it's the Eccles Main Theater on the campus of Utah Tech. I'm going to take another commercial break. Got a little bit more with Greg, about 10 more minutes after the commercials with Greg. I'm going to ask him, kind of tell a story about early pioneers in Mormonism coming to Utah. We'll talk about that a little bit and more. It's history that doesn't suck.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 950 right now on KDXU. I'm with Dr. Greg Jackson, who's extremely popular. History That Doesn't Suck podcasts can be listened to right now. I was just browsing through. I think you have 150 something episodes. So I got a lot of listening to do, Greg. I got to get working on that one. Thanks for coming on today.
Good.
You have a show on July 2nd, 7:30 at the Eccles Main Theater on Utah Tech campus. Part of, it's the 4th of July week, part of festival week and exciting, celebrating our country. And I know you'll be spending a lot of time on that show talking about some of the miracles that had to happen to put the U.S. together.
That's exactly right. It's the first 100 years of U.S. history with, storytelling, lights, music, video, and, I'll remind listeners as well, you certainly don't have to be a listener of the podcast. And if you're intimidated by, for your gray-haired listeners, intimidated by listening to podcasts, come experience, the live event in a theater. It's very family friendly. Bring the whole crew, and I think it's a great way to spend your 4th of July weekend.
I'm going to be there as well. I think it'll be a fantastic show. Looking forward to it. I want to tell you a quick story, Greg. When I was in 8th grade, I grew up down in Texas. I was in 8th grade, and I was a football player. And I remember going to 8th grade. You had Texas history in 7th grade and then U.S. history in 8th grade. And I remember we're sitting there in class, and I'm Mr. Cool Athlete sitting on the back row trying to be, you know how it is, and feet up on a chair, whatever. And we were flipping through the book, and the teacher of the class was my football coach. Because back then coaches had to teach, and not all coaches do anymore. But anyway, coach was teaching history class. And we flipped to the next page, and on that page, only about 3/4 of a page, there was a section on the Mormon pioneers coming across the plains. And I remember this so distinctly. It was like it was yesterday. The coach / teacher stopped, and he looked up and he said, and remember, this is Texas. He said, "Are there any Mormons in this class?" And I was on the back row trying to be a cool guy, right? And so I raised my hand up about maybe 7 inches just because I wanted to represent, yes, that I was a Mormon, but I didn't want to be pointed out in front of everybody who was not Mormon in that class.
Right.
He kind of raises his head up, and he looks back, and he goes, "Griffin, you're a Mormon?" I said, yes, sir. Because you always said sir in school in Texas. I said, "Yes, sir." And
absolutely.
He goes, "Huh." And that was it. He went on. We went on with the class, and we talked about the Mormon pioneers and stuff. And that was actually, as scared as I was of raising my hand, that was the last I heard of anything about that. But it fascinated me. Looking back now, the one thing that maybe was lost on me then that I think about now was, there was 3/4 of one page devoted to the Mormon pioneers coming across the plains. I noticed one of your podcasts talks a lot about that, but is that surprising that only 3/4 of one page of a history book was devoted to that?
It it is and it isn't. So, doing this podcast, doing History That Doesn't Suck, which is intentionally a survey of U.S. history, and we use the word survey in the history teaching world when we're saying that this is an overview, overview of a country, for instance.
Okay.
And whenever I'm preparing, an episode, I will go read one of my favorite textbooks because, I'm a nerdy professor. I have favorite textbooks. to see how did they summarize this? What did they think were the most important things? And I am just floored sometimes, to find something like, say, the Boston Massacre, getting one paragraph. And
yeah.
I'm just like, wow, how can you, that is way too brief. And so that's exactly what you're experiencing there. And yet the not surprising thing, and this is where I put my professional historian hat on, is, to no fault to the teacher, but think about what a daunting thing it is to have to try and teach kids who may or may not even be interested all U.S. history in a single academic year, when you get them for 50 minutes a day, 40 minutes of effective, you know, class time by the time they settle down, and then, you know, you got the packing up at the end of class. So, you know, these textbooks are often geared toward the fact that they've got to move quickly. And that's actually, if you've wondered why history sucks in school, well, it's because of that. When you have to move so quickly, you don't have the time to get to know the historical figures. You don't get to meet them and have their story come to life. Hmm. And when you don't have the story, history is boring. It's no fun. The Mormon Trail itself is such a fascinating tale, and one that's, you know, filled with, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, plenty of horror and bravery, sacrifice, as these 60,000 to 70,000 religiously persecuted Americans and others made their way to what was considered the American desert. I mean, there's a reason the Oregon Trail went from Independence, Missouri, and everyone went all the way out to freaking Oregon or California. This was considered essentially, you know, terrible land. Nowhere someone in their sane mind would try to set up a permanent, you know, you had a few indigenous peoples, yes, of course, but living in a much more migratory pattern. All that to say, I mean, I do an episode on the Mormon Trail. That's episode number 32, where I do get into those stories. I'm not surprised, though. I'll tell you, though, if I may, I had a similar experience growing up in Southern California, where we had a substitute one day, and they were reading through, you know, the material that the teacher had given them. And I don't remember what the course was. I think it might have been English. But we had this textbook that had stories about hardships and persecution, things like that. And to my shock, I come into class, and the Hans Mill Massacre is the subject for, you know, 10, 15 minutes. There were other things that we were getting to. Well, the substitute teacher proceeded to contradict the textbook. The textbook, you know, it said very honestly and correctly that this is an instance where the Mormons were massacred, and that they were a people who were chased across the country, persecuted for their beliefs. And yes, in a more, you know, careful narrative, we can get into the Mormons, my ancestors included in that, you know, not always getting along with their neighbors, sometimes being a little too cliquish for the Western world. But that certainly doesn't, you know, that's hardly a legitimate reason to say issue an extermination order and deprive them of constitutional rights. But this substitute, he started to explain how it was the Mormon's fault. And apparently I've always been a brash, you know, I was a brash young man then. I did raise my hand and let him know that, just letting him know that I was Mormon and that I did not, this was incongruent with my understanding. He shut down pretty quick. It was an intriguing day for me.
Yeah. Well, and he went back to driving the bus after that anyway, so.
Yeah, he did.
Or whatever. But we've already used up our time, Greg. It's been fascinating talking to you, and I am really looking forward to your show on July 2nd about the first 100 years of our country. And I have 50 other questions I was going to ask you, but unfortunately the constraints of radio are you get your 1 hour and then you got to move on. So
I know it.
But Greg, just, you know, I'm really looking forward to, you know, we were talking about the pioneers. I'm really looking forward to you come talking about before the pioneers and what happened with our country. And by the way, they finally do settle the West out here. And then Brigham Young says, let's send some people down here to St. George, too. Because, you know, Salt Lake's not harsh enough. Let's make it harsher and go down there where it's 150.
Or it's even hotter.
Yeah.
Exactly. So. Well, just a reminder to your listeners, htbspodcast.com/tour. You can get the tickets right there on my website. If you're looking to get tickets, htbspodcast.com/tour.
Very good. htdspodcast.com. Thank you, Greg, so much. Great to talk to you today.
Thank you.
be back tomorrow. Again, Joanne Britton is going to be here in studio. We'll also have McCray Hepler later in the week. Kristen Norton, who's running against Joanne for the state school board spot, will be on the show as well. And I'll be back, as always, tomorrow, bright and early. Talk to you then.